Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
If you're hearing this, you're probably already listening to BBC's award-winning news podcasts. But did you know that you can listen to them without ads? Get current affairs podcasts like Global News, Americast and The Global Story, plus other great BBC podcasts from history to comedy to true crime, all ad-free. Simply subscribe to BBC Podcast Premium on Apple Podcasts or listen to Amazon Music with a Prime membership. Spend less time on ads and more time with BBC Podcasts.
Hello, I'm Louise, and welcome to this bonus episode in the documentary from the BBC World Service. I'm the producer of the Inquiry podcast. We put one question to four expert witnesses to answer. To hear every episode, search for the Inquiry wherever you find this podcast.
Welcome to the Inquiry with me, Tanya Beckett. One question, four expert witnesses, and an answer. Hezbollah is based in southern Lebanon. It has both military and political wings, but is designated in its entirety by many countries, including Western states, Israel and the Gulf Cooperation Council, as a terrorist organisation. Since Israel launched its war in Gaza in the wake of the Hamas attacks of October the 7th, it has intensified its military activities along the border between Israel and Lebanon. On the evening of Saturday, the 27th of July, 12 children and young people who were playing at a football pitch in the Golan Heights were killed by a military rocket. Speculation immediately began as to whether the rocket hit civilians because it missed its intended target, and of course, who fired it. It seemed most likely that it had been launched by one of Tehran's proxy militias in the Middle East, Hezbollah. The group denied the attack. The persistent question has been, what is it trying to achieve? Are the attacks intended as a show of support for the Palestinians in Gaza, or an attempt to take advantage of Israel's diverted military focus? And could this dangerous front lead to an all-out war in the Middle East? This week on The Inquiry, we're asking, what does Hezbollah want?
Part 1. The Origins of Hezbollah.
My name is Aurélie Daher. I'm an associate professor in political science at the Université Paris-Dauphine in Paris.
The story of Hezbollah's emergence as a military force begins in the late 1970s, when Israel was facing a persistent security threat along its northern border with Lebanon. Militants from the Palestinian Liberation Organization, the PLO, were launching rockets into Israel from Lebanon. The attacks culminated in 1978 with an assault on a bus on Israel's coastal highway. 38 Israeli civilians were killed. Israel responded with a military incursion across the border into Lebanon.
At that time, a large part of Palestinian resistance was acting from the south of Lebanon and carrying out regular attacks against the Israeli territory, the northern part of Israel. And the Israelis in 78 launched that big 3-month-long operation to create a buffer zone to push back the Palestinians to the north at a distance that would be sufficient so the Palestinians' rockets would not reach the Israeli territory anymore.
The Israeli operation led to significant casualties on both sides and the displacement of many thousands of Lebanese people, but still failed to stop cross-border attacks. Then, in 1982, Israel launched another incursion. This time, its forces penetrated much deeper into Lebanon, reaching the capital city, Beirut. Between 15 and 20,000 lives were lost, most of them civilians. It marked a significant turning point.
The south of Lebanon is mainly inhabited by Shia people who were, as you can imagine, the community in Lebanon that was stricken the hardest as collateral damage of that Israeli invasion. So they started to mobilize in the northern Shia areas. And when eventually that second invasion happened, this is where basically those clerics in the north decided to set up a new militia, Shia militia.
This new militia was called the Islamic Resistance of Lebanon and had one clear focus.
The one and main objective was military, was to fight off the Israelis, to kick them out of Lebanon. It had nothing to do with establishing an Islamic government in Lebanon. It didn't even have a very elaborated political vision of what was to be done on the Lebanese political arena. It was really about sending back the Israelis on the other side of the border. So the whole adventure started as a patriotic resistance-related operation.
There was, of course, the question of who would fund the activities of this new militia. The most obvious place to look for solidarity was the Islamic Republic of Iran. Iran was itself in the wake of a revolution. The Islamic Resistance of Lebanon, which was later named Hezbollah, seemed to share some of its goals.
The Iranians at that time were not quite enthusiastic at the idea of sending troops and reinforcement into Lebanon, but they brought a know-how. They taught the first cohorts, I would say, of the IRL how to use guns, gave them a little bit of money, but the idea was the Iranians will never fight in Lebanon. It was up to the Lebanese to do so.
Iran, therefore, assumed a direct role in establishing, funding, training and arming Hezbollah. But if Hezbollah were to command credibility, recruit fighters and project its cause within Lebanon, this new militia group needed an official platform. In 1992, Hezbollah's political wing joined the government in Beirut. Our expert witness says for the group, this toehold in parliament offered it legitimacy when it came to its military activities.
The way Hezbollah understand politics is we're there, we're going to let all the political parties, whether they are our allies or they are our adversaries, we're going to let them do whatever they want to do. They are going to rule over Lebanon. We're going to let them do that. In return, what we ask is they don't jeopardize the interests of the IRL. Meaning, for instance, we want to be sure that no political party will come one day and push forward a law that will ask for the disarmament of the IRL. Basically, the deal is Hezbollah is giving carte blanche to all the other political parties. So it works more like a lobby than like a regular governmental party.
And this rather opaque arrangement has, over the years, persisted.
So far, since 2005, every Lebanese government has legitimized the action of Hezbollah against Israel in South Lebanon. Not in so many words, but every time there's a paragraph that says thus, the Lebanese population is entitled to carry out any resistance action against the Israelis by any means they see fit and appropriate.
In effect, the arrangement separated the government in Beirut from the military activities of Hezbollah.
The Lebanese have their own story also with the Palestinians, and even the Lebanese who support the Palestinians. But we as Lebanese are not ready to pay the heavy price for doing the job on behalf of the Palestinians. The idea is we want to support you, but we're not ready, for instance, to have Israel destroy the whole of Lebanon.
Time for our second expert witness.
Part 2. The relationship between Israel and Hezbollah.
Hezbollah has always had an antagonistic relationship with Israel because Hezbollah began as a militia determined to liberate Lebanon from Israeli occupation. So Hezbollah has always viewed Israel as an enemy that it seeks to eradicate.
We've said that Hezbollah emerged after Israel's invasion of Lebanon in 1982.
For the next nearly two decades, both sides were in active conflict.
My name is Lina Khatib, Associate Fellow with the Middle East and North Africa Programme at Chatham House.
By 2000, the Palestinian Liberation Organization was no longer a significant presence in southern Lebanon. Thus, amid domestic and international pressure, Israel withdrew its troops.
Hezbollah saw the Israeli withdrawal as a victory for itself. And there was no longer a need for Hezbollah to conduct military operations against Israel at a high intensity because Israel had practically left almost all of Lebanese territory. So in a way, 2000 till around 2006 marked a period of lukewarm relations between Hezbollah and Israel, where ideologically nothing had changed, but militarily there was a lot less fighting going on.
These 6 years of relative calm were abruptly upended, not this time through the threat from the Palestinians, but a more recently emerged military force. A new, albeit brief, conflict was about to unfold.
In 2006, Hezbollah entered Israeli territory and kidnapped two Israeli soldiers. And this sparked all-out war between Hezbollah and Israel, which lasted for just over a month and was very devastating for Lebanon. The 2006 war ended with an agreement that was brokered indirectly between Hezbollah and Israel, so both parties refrained from attacking one another at high intensity.
It looked like another fresh start. The agreement set up a new buffer zone in Lebanon's south. But crucially, this time it was to remain free of armed personnel. Tensions continued over a narrow strip of land called the Sheba Farms, but attacks were much more limited in scope.
Hezbollah had, in a way, found a comfortable middle ground in which it used Israel's occupation of the Sheba Farms as a reason to argue why Hezbollah should retain its arms as an armed group in Lebanon. But at the same time, it did not feel the need to enter all-out war with Israel. And Israel likewise felt that it could live with the low level of threat that Hezbollah presented during this time.
For a time, it felt like Hezbollah's purpose had come close to being reached. But then, in October 2023, came a crucial turning point. Palestinian militia group Hamas, which controls Gaza, breached the wall separating the strip from Israel and launched attacks in Israel's south that, according to Israeli authorities, resulted in the deaths of at least 1,200 people and more than 240 people being taken hostage. In response, Israel launched a military operation in Gaza, which by August 2024 had cost 40,000 lives, according to the Hamas-run health ministry. During this time, in the north of Israel, Hezbollah upped its rocket fire across the South Lebanon border. The militia group that had been set up to drive Israel out of Lebanon now appeared ready to intervene directly on behalf of Palestinians in Gaza. A different battle, but with the same adversary. It was now apparent the cause of the Palestinians in Gaza and those of Hezbollah in Lebanon had to some extent converged.
Hezbollah will follow the lead of the Palestinians in terms of what they deem acceptable regarding Israel. If the Palestinians agree to a two-state solution, then Hezbollah will have no choice but to agree to that solution as well. And so ultimately, Hezbollah can't be more Palestinian than the Palestinians.
What then is the connection between the two groups? Time for our next expert witness.
911, what is your emergency?
Most towns have a local celebrity.
Who is it that's missing?
It's my dad. He went out into the water.
An eccentric known throughout the community.
Inverness market trader Kim Avis.
Kim Avis.
Kim Avis.
Inverness revolved around Kim in a way.
Difference is, the local eccentric from my hometown made international headlines.
The man's son reported he disappeared in treacherous water.
Search and rescue teams thought they had yet another drowning on their hands. Or did they?
The story's not adding up.
He is completely unhinged.
It was violent, it was controlling, it was sadistic.
Dead Man Running, wherever you get your podcasts.
Part 3. Hamas and Hezbollah.
Dr. Bashir Saadi is lecturer of politics and religion at the University of Stirling in Scotland. He explains that whilst Hamas and Hezbollah are from two different sides of a religious divide within Islam, the first Sunni and the second Shia, when it comes to how they view the conflict with Israel, they have a great deal in common.
Both are Islamic movements. Both identify to the idea that religion is part of political identification or the political vision. But in one case, they are Shia Muslims, and the other, they are Sunni Muslims. That actually is not really a huge difference, to be honest, because in the case of Hezbollah and Hamas, both are moved by the struggle against Israel, basically. And so these kinds of religious denominational differences actually fade.
As an indication of how closely these organizations are aligned, Hamas has not only secured funding from Hezbollah's greatest ally, Iran, but also gained from Hezbollah's military expertise, not least in the building of underground passageways to house munitions and fighters.
And so that tunnel idea may have been part and parcel of this kind of Hezbollah-Hamas relationship or knowledge transmission, let's call it. Now, how much of this has to do with a clear chain and command relationship, I don't think is as clear as we would think. A lot of what happens on the ground is very secretive. So, for example, something like October 7 would have happened without Hezbollah's knowledge, even though maybe these organizations knew that Hamas is ready for something like that, you know, to do something like that.
What might this ideological link and exchange of information between Hezbollah and Hamas mean, then, for how they could cooperate in the future?
So, in this sense, Hezbollah and Hamas have a very clear objective militarily. Anything that weakens the security system of Israel or that marks points for them to renegotiate the terms of agreement or non-agreement on borders and on things like that, on questions of security.
There are, of course, limitations to working together from the perspective of Hezbollah.
So if Hamas opens a front in Gaza, that doesn't mean that Hezbollah is going to start like firing missiles haphazardly into Israel just to back up Hamas. They have to think of how this impacts on Lebanon. They have to think of what actually helps strategically overall and what are their interests. And their interest is not now, oh, okay, I'm going to just liberate all of Palestine. Their interest is strengthening their borders, making sure they can achieve very clear political goals.
Time for our next expert witness.
Part 4. State within a state.
As an organization, Hezbollah has been in an almost constant process of evolution and transformation. Given the fluidity of Lebanese politics and the changing strategic landscape within which Lebanon finds itself, Hezbollah has had to adapt in terms of not just its strategy and tactics, but more broadly its identity and its position within the Lebanese body politic.
Mehran Kamrava is professor of government at Georgetown University in Qatar. He says that under the guidance of its longtime leader, Hassan Nasrallah, Hezbollah has built a formidable reputation.
Hezbollah, in many ways, is the only Arab army that has been successful relatively in attacking Israel. And you look at Hezbollah and Hezbollah's Hassan Nasrallah, and you see that Hassan Nasrallah openly threatens Israel. He sends drones over Israel and Israeli military commanders exhibit a certain amount of begrudging respect for him.
So what are its immediate goals now, do you think?
Well, there are a number of goals that Hezbollah pursues simultaneously. First and foremost, defense of Lebanon, more particularly of southern Lebanon, which is an area in which Lebanese Shia are concentrated. So in light of the chronic weakness and fragility of the central government in Beirut, Hezbollah views itself as the first line of defense against Israeli aggression. At the same time, it plays a very important role as a deterrent against Israeli attacks on Iran. One of the reasons why Israel has been relatively measured in attacking Iran is because of the important role that Hezbollah has played and its effectiveness as a deterrent force against Israel.
In August, Hezbollah released a slickly produced video showing its fighters driving large trucks carrying missiles through brightly lit underground roads. It was an apparent bid to showcase its highly developed arms and intelligence capabilities.
We have seen that Hezbollah, at least on two occasions, has sent drones inside Israel that have sent back recordings of sensitive Israeli sites, intelligence sites, military sites. So it does appear as if Hezbollah either has strengthened its military capabilities and has made its military prowess more robust, or that was always the case and it has simply just shown its ability more.
But Mehran says whatever Hezbollah's convictions and military resources, the organization is constrained by the fact that it acts on behalf of a different sovereign country.
Really, the one ally that Hezbollah needs and is constantly mindful of, in addition to its strategic allies, is the Lebanese public, the Sunnis, the Druze, and those who play a critical role in the extent to which Hezbollah's message has popular purchase and currency within Lebanon. So in many ways, what we see is Hezbollah playing a very critical role in making sure that its appeal and its relationships are robust, both with its strategic allies, Iran, Syria, the Houthis, but also with the broader Lebanese public.
Beyond this small group, however, Hezbollah does find itself considerably isolated.
How do the Middle Eastern countries that are not involved, for example, not Syria, not Iran, how do they view Hezbollah?
For them, Hezbollah is a menacing force. It is a non-state actor that has become in many ways a state within a state, and it has given inspiration to militias in Iraq, to, of course, the Houthis in Yemen. And the last thing you can imagine a government like Egypt or Saudi Arabia or Jordan wants is a very effective, relatively autonomous and independent force that is both politically powerful and militarily powerful. And so many countries outside of Iran and Syria view Hezbollah as not an immediate threat, but certainly a menacing presence.
Now we return to our question. What does Hezbollah want? Hezbollah's original purpose was to drive Israel out of Lebanon. There remain disputed areas, but broadly, the agreement struck in 2006 has imposed a measure of calm. But the start of the war in Gaza in October 2023 has led to the group reigniting its cause against Israel, this time in solidarity with fellow Muslim militia group Hamas. Its intensified attacks on Israel during the war in Gaza suggest that it is prepared to rally behind Palestinians. This is rather unsurprising. Hezbollah has continually evolved since its inception, and this is not the first time it's aligned with the Palestinians. But given that its primary sponsor is Tehran, perhaps the real task is to identify not simply the goals of Hezbollah, but those of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This inquiry was presented by me, Tanya Beckett, produced by Louise Clark, researched by Matt Tolson, and mixed by Gareth Jones. The editor was Tara McDermott.
If you're hearing this, you're probably already listening to BBC's award-winning news podcasts. But did you know that you can listen to them without ads? Get current affairs podcasts like Global News, Americast, and The Global Story, plus other great BBC podcasts from history to comedy to true crime, all ad-free. Simply subscribe to BBC Podcast Premium on Apple Podcasts or listen to Amazon Music with a Prime membership. Spend less time on ads and more time with BBC Podcasts.